Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast. In December of 1945, five Navy training planes lifted off from Fort Lauderdale for what was supposed to be a routine navigation exercise, the kind they ran constantly and rarely thought twice about. It wasn't a test flight or anything experimental, just basic training, head east over the Atlantic, run a few headings, make the turns, then come home before dark. The instructor had done it before. The students had plenty of hours. It was the sort of afternoon nobody would remember. For the first part of the flight, nothing felt off. Then the lead pilot radioed that his compass didn't look right. He wasn't alarmed, just unsure. Another crew checked theirs and got something different. Someone said they might be over the Florida Keys, which didn't make sense because they hadn't flown south. They adjusted headings and circled, doing what pilots always do when they think they're drifted a little. The problem was, all they really had to do was turn west. Florida isn't subtle. In daylight, you hit land eventually. That's just geography. But the radio traffic kept stretching out. Bearings repeated. Corrections made. The voices got less certain. Taylor kept trying to regroup everyone, telling them to stay close, telling them they'd sort it out, but they never did. The signal thinned, static crept in, a few broken words came through, and then nothing. Five planes took off that afternoon, and none of them came back. No wreckage ever turned up, no debris, no confirmed crash site, just empty water where they were supposed to be. So you're left with the questions. How does an experienced Navy instructor lose the coastline he just departed from? How do multiple compasses disagree at the same time? How do five aircraft disappear without leaving behind a single piece to point at? And how does something this ordinary simply vanish? If you want to understand any of that, you have to start at the beginning, back when this was just another day on base. This is Divergent Shadows. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you've been here before, I appreciate you coming back. I'm Ralph, Marine Corps veteran, filmmaker, and the creator of Divergent Files. This series, Divergent Shadows, is the quieter side of what I do. Real stories told calmly and straight through. Enjoy, and let's begin. The air station at Fort Lauderdale wasn't doing anything unusual that afternoon. It was just another training day. Planes cycling in and out, mechanics moving between hangars, instructors running the same drills they'd run for months, and nobody really paying attention unless something broke. The war had ended not long before, so most of this flying was routine by now. Log your hours, run the exercise, come back. The man leading the flight was Lieutenant Charles Taylor. He was 30, experienced, and had flown combat missions in the Pacific. The Navy trusted him to teach younger pilots how not to get lost, which was about as ordinary and unremarkable a job as you could hand someone with that kind of background. The students with him weren't test pilots or thrill seekers either. They were trainees, finishing a navigation drill. The assignment was simple enough that you could almost do it on autopilot. Head east over open water, follow your headings, make the turns, then point west and fly home. There wasn't bad weather. There wasn't a long-range mission. If your instruments worked and you followed the numbers, you ended up right back where you started. Nobody on that runway thought they were watching anything special. It was just five planes scheduled for a few hours over the Atlantic and then dinner back on base. The kind of flight everyone expected to be back before sunset without anyone giving it another thought. They lifted off a little after 2 in the afternoon and headed east like they'd done plenty of times before. climbing out over the water until the coastline flattened behind them and the ocean filled the whole view. For a while, it sounded exactly like every other training flight. Normal check-ins over the radio, headings confirmed, fuel calls, nothing that would have made anyone sit up straight or back at the base. Then Taylor keyed the mic and said his compass didn't look right. He wasn't panicked or dramatic about it. He just sounded confused, like the needle wasn't setting where it should and the picture outside the cockpit wasn't matching what the number said. One of the other crews checked theirs and got something different. Another pilot said they might be over the Florida Keys, which didn't make sense because they hadn't flown south at all. The math just didn't work. So they did what pilots always do when things feel a little off. They talked it through, checked their last heading, estimated drift, picked a new course, and waited to see if the world outside started lining up again. Only, there wasn't much out there to line up with, just water in every direction. As the minutes passed, you could hear the tone changing in the transmissions. The calls got longer, more cautious, less certain. Taylor kept trying to pull everyone together, telling the students to stay close, telling them they'd sort it out. At one point, he admitted he wasn't even sure which way was west anymore. So they circled, tried new headings, repeated the same bearings, like maybe saying them out loud would make them true. Then the signal started thinning out. Static crept in, replies stepped on each other. A few sentences got cut off halfway through. The last transmissions came through in pieces, broken enough that you could only catch fragments, and then nothing. Back at the base, nobody panicked at first. Training flights ran long all the time. Headwinds, small detours, a student getting churned around for a few minutes. It wasn't unusual for someone to check in late, especially over open water. But as the afternoon slid toward evening and there was still no word, the mood shifted. They tried raising Taylor again, then the other aircraft, but nothing came back. By the time the sun started dropping, it stopped feeling like a delay and started feeling like a problem. Search planes launched before dark and retraced the route the training flight was supposed to fly, scanning the water for anything that didn't belong. The Coast Guard pushed boats out. More aircraft lifted off while there was still light to work with. If five planes had gone down offshore, you would expect signs, fuel on the surface, debris drifting, a life raft, even a section of a wing. But they didn't find any of it. As night settled in, they kept flying anyway, widening the search patterns and sweeping the water with spotlights and flares, hoping something would catch. During one of those launches, a larger rescue aircraft, a PBM Mariner carrying 13 crew members, took off to join the search. And guess what? It never returned. Later reports pointed to an explosion in the air, likely mechanical and unrelated to the training flight itself. But different cause, same outcome. By morning, the ocean looked exactly as it had the day before, calm, unbroken, no visible sign that anything had happened. The search continued for days, stretching beyond the original route as planes flew grid patterns and ships scanned the surface. Civilian reports came in from vessels that thought they'd seen something, and each one was checked, but nothing held up. There was no confirmed debris field, no floating wreckage, no recovered bodies, no location anyone could circle on a map and say, "It happened here." When aircraft go down over water, something usually comes back. A cushion, a panel, a thin sheen of fuel spreading across the surface. But this time, the ocean gave back nothing. On paper, it was as if five aircraft and their crews had simply disappeared somewhere between takeoff and sunset. As the days passed and nothing surfaced, the search moved from water to paperwork, because eventually there was nothing left to scan but pages. The Navy went back through what they had, radio traffic, weather reports, the last headings Taylor called out, estimates of where the flight should have been when contact dropped. But without wreckage, without even a confirmed splash point, there wasn't much to reconstruct. You can't reverse engineer a crash when you don't have a single piece of the crash. So, they filed the only conclusion they really could. The flight was listed as lost at sea, attributed to navigation trouble, possible weather drift, and fuel exhaustion. In plain terms, that means the planes likely went down somewhere offshore and never returned or were found. No coordinates, no recovery, 14 men moved from active duty to missing. On paper, that closed it. But when a case ends without anything physical to point at, it doesn't stay quiet for long. The empty space starts filling itself fast. Some explanations stayed mechanical. A faulty compass, instrument drift, pilots misjudging distance over open water, which does happen when everything below you looks the same for hours. Others looked at the region itself. That stretch of ocean already carried stories among sailors and pilots about sudden weather shifts, strange currents, and navigation trouble. Over time, it picked up a name, the Bermuda Triangle, and Flight 19 became one of the cases most often tied to it. There were other ideas too, sudden storms that never made it into the official reports, magnetic interference, military testing that wasn't publicly documented. Later retellings went further even still. Each theory tried to answer the same thing, how five aircraft could leave cleanly and leave nothing behind. None of those explanations produced new wreckage. None added a confirmed location. They grew around the same absence. The paperwork never changed, and the questions never went away. When you lay the whole thing out from start to finish, it doesn't look dramatic at all. It just looks ordinary. A routine training flight, an experienced instructor, clear weather, a simple exercise over water they'd flown a dozen times before. The kind of afternoon that usually ends with engines cooling down and everyone walking back across the tarmac talking about dinner. And then, somewhere between takeoff and sunset, five aircraft just disappear. No wreckage, no debris, nothing you could point at and say, there, that's where it ended. And that's the part that never sits right. Because how do multiple compasses disagree at the same time in clear daylight? How does a guy with thousands of hours in the air lose the coastline he literally just left? How do five planes miss Florida when all you have to do is turn west and keep flying? And how does that much metal hit open water without leaving even one piece behind? Those questions never really left. The paperwork got filed. The names went into a report. The ocean kept doing what oceans do. But that afternoon never finished. We've covered the story, and these are the shadows they leave behind. Thanks for being here tonight. If you want more stories like this, you know where to find me, you know where the links are. And if you choose to support the channel, it really helps. I'll see you next time.